All right, welcome to the Young Turks. I am your host, Cenk Uygur. We've got a hell of a week for you guys and a hell of a show today. So, giant stories a little bit later in the program. Obviously, Bill O'Reilly's $32 million settlement. Jesus Christ, what did he do? I'll get into that a little bit later in the program. Then there's high drama at the DNC. Just when you thought the establishment couldn't sink any lower, dirty tricks like we have not seen, maybe ever, directed at progressives from the Democratic Party. So yes, that's an amazing story, and you'll only see it here, and I have that later for you in the program. And then a company tells the Young Turks that we are not allowed to mock the president. Who is that company, and under what circumstances did they tell us that? That'll make your blood boil a little bit too. That's also later in the program. So don't miss any of this show. And as I think a lot of you know, if you're only watching for a little bit live or otherwise, get the whole 2-hour show commercial free by becoming a member. TYTnetwork.com/join. All right, let's get started. Let's go over here. Okay. So we've got drama between John McCain and Donald Trump again. This time McCain with a clear shot against Trump, which I have to confess that I loved. Before we get to that, let me give you the context. You remember, of course, when Donald Trump was running for president, he had said about John McCain, quote, he's not a war hero. He was a war hero because he was captured. I like people who weren't captured. Now, of course, he said that with the convenience of having avoided the Vietnam draft. And in fact, that's what John McCain's gonna talk about in a second. But I did wanna give you a little bit more context too about John McCain's service, if you didn't know. In 1967, McCain was shot down over northern Vietnam during a bombing raid, breaking both his arms and right leg while ejecting from his plane. He spent the next 5 years in the notorious Hanoi Hilton prison camp, where he was repeatedly tortured and spent 2 years in solitary confinement. The scars remain with McCain today. He's unable to raise either of his arms above his shoulders. Trump has reportedly never apologized to McCain for the remarks. Now, that doesn't mean that John McCain is immune from criticism, far from it. And I have criticized him often on his hawkish stance when it comes to foreign policy. Everybody's allowed to disagree. But saying that he's not a war hero because he was captured from a guy who ran from the Vietnam War, that's a little bit too much for everyone. That's, by the way, not a little. It's way, way too much, apparently including for John McCain, who had this to say recently.
It was a tumultuous time, and most of it was bred by the conflict. And one aspect of the conflict, by the way, that I will never, ever countenance is that we drafted the lowest income level of America, and the highest income level found a doctor that would say that they had a bone spur. That is wrong. That is wrong. If we're going to ask every American to serve, every American should serve.
Ooh, shots fired, and not so friendly fire. The person who claimed to have bone spurs and was very rich at the time, and his daddy got him out of the war, Donald Trump. Let me give you some of the background on that. Later, McCain tried to walk it back a little bit, like, well, I didn't say Donald Trump. No, you didn't. Bone spurs. So here's the history of Trump on this issue. When Trump was in college, as Salon explains, from 1964 to 1968, he received 4 draft deferments for education. But in 1968, during the height of the Vietnam War, Trump received a 1Y medical deferment for bone spurs on the heels of his feet. So the reference to bone spurs couldn't be any clearer. There's no other person known to have bone spurs and gotten out of the war because of that. Rush Limbaugh got out of the war. He said he had a tail, I'm not kidding. Some sort of discharge built up near his anus, and that's why he couldn't go to Vietnam. Not kidding, look it up. Almost all the right wing are filled with cowards who love to push your kids into war but didn't go themselves. Ted Nugent literally crapped himself to get out of the war. Look that up, it's amazing. Tom DeLay back in the day, hot tub Tom DeLay, said that the minorities took his spots, otherwise he would have gone. Dick Cheney said he had better things to do. Later, he would have better things to do, like starting wars that your kids have to die for. So all those guys didn't go. Now, if that wasn't bad enough about Trump absolutely running from Vietnam and then saying he doesn't like people who were captured during that war he chose not to go to, then you have this bit of context. The president later told the New York Times that it was a minor malady and that he could not remember which foot had been injured. In other words, yeah, of course we made it up. We were rich. My daddy got me a doctor's note about it, some bone spurs I clearly didn't have. Believe it or not, back then he was actually an athlete. I know it seems a little weird these days, but yes, he was. It was a minor malady. In other words, it didn't exist, and he doesn't remember which foot it was in because it wasn't in either. Okay, now just to be absolutely over the top on this, Donald Trump later joked on the Howard Stern show that he did have his own personal Vietnam. What was it? Well, it was on the issue of sexually transmitted diseases. Quote from Donald Trump, "I've been so lucky in terms of that whole world," meaning the sexually transmitted diseases. "It is a dangerous world out there. It's scary, like Vietnam. Sort of like the Vietnam era. It's my personal Vietnam. I feel like a great and very brave soldier." Because back then he was going to so many orgies while other people were dying because they weren't as rich as him and as corrupt as him, that he felt like, well, you know, I dodged a couple of bullets there in the different orgies that I went to, and I didn't get any STDs. And I'm a brave and great soldier, but John McCain isn't. I think that shot that McCain took at him is the very least he could do. It's about time, and I hope he does a hell of a lot more than that, because Donald Trump has richly deserved it. Okay, now let me go to a bizarre story out of Texas. Now you all know that Hurricane Harvey hit Houston pretty hard and Texas overall. And so now there's relief efforts, still after all this time, there's a lot of cleanup to do and a lot of things to put back together. And it affects a lot of the towns and cities in that area. And they're gonna need some relief. And so luckily there's folks that are bringing them that relief. But it turns out in one case, there is a really bizarre caveat that goes along with it. This is according to Law News. The city of Dickinson, Texas released on Monday a new application for relief funds to rebuild homes and businesses. Great. But it includes wording in which applicants promise not to boycott Israel. What? What does that have anything to do with the hurricane? What does it have anything to do with Texas? What are we talking about here? Are these folks insane? Oh, I know your house and your family were devastated, and we'll give you some money, but just make sure that you're not allowed to speak out against Israel from now on. What other country would this be okay for? Now remember though, you're not allowed to criticize Nicaragua. What? Why on God's green earth is that related to this? Let alone the fact that that's unconstitutional, which is what we're gonna get to next. So this is that exact language that was used for Hurricane Harvey repair grant application and agreement. Hold. Did I mention that I'm sick today? So, oh boy, there's gonna be a lot of coughing. You guys are used to this. All right, wish me luck. All right, now here's the warning. Verification not to boycott Israel. By executing this agreement below, the applicant verifies that the applicant does not boycott Israel and will not boycott Israel during the term of this agreement. Wow, really appreciate it. It's very clear. Not only are you not allowed to exercise your freedom of speech right now, you will not be allowed to exercise it for as long as this agreement is in place and you need money to take care of your family. We got you over a barrel now. Don't you dare say anything about Israel. Okay, now Andre Segura for the American Civil Liberties Union of Texas says the First Amendment protects Americans' right to boycott, and the government cannot condition hurricane relief or any other public benefit on a commitment to refrain from protected political expression. Dickinson's requirement is an egregious violation of the First Amendment. Now, Law News gives it more context here. They explained that the city attorney of Dickinson said they were just following the law, according to KTRK, that's a local station down there. Governor Greg Abbott signed that statute in May. It stops Texas from doing business with companies involved in the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement against Israel over the nation's treatment of Palestinians. Now, you could have different opinions about whether that's the right thing to do in regards to Israel, but not if you're in the state of Texas. Their big government doesn't want you to have your own opinion, is not interested in your own opinion. It says you must follow Greg Abbott's opinions. What happened, right-wingers? I thought you were against big government.
This sounds like it is the definition of big government. And by the way, what happened? I thought you were a strict constitutionalist. It doesn't get any more constitutional than the First Amendment and our right to speak our minds. Freedom of speech, freedom of the press. No, in the state of Texas, they don't like the United States Constitution. Especially Republicans like Abbott there don't like it. And they want to take your rights away. And then God help you if you suffered a devastating hurricane. They'll help you, but only as long as you agree to give up your right to speak against their favored countries. And again, what does Texas have to do with Israel? I don't know that anybody knows that.
Okay, now this is their Texas is not the only place doing it though. The ACLU recently sued over a similar law in Kansas. A former teacher was working on as a contractor for Kansas Department of Education's Math and Science Partnerships program. She refused to sign a form to certify she isn't boycotting Israel because of a church-led boycott of that country. Accordingly, the state declined to contract her. They took money out of her pocket because of her political speech. And wait a minute, I thought conservatives were all about don't interfere with the church. Oh, so you meant don't interfere with the church if it's hating gay people. Then don't interfere with the church. Let them hate the gays. Let them discriminate against the gays. Let them do whatever they want to the gays. Oh, but you want to speak out against Israel? No, then your church has no rights. I don't care about your church. I don't care about your religious beliefs. You will bow your head. And if not, you will lose contracts. You won't get relief. This is insanity. It can't get any more un-American than this. And by the way, first of all, it's an allegiance oath, which is also not constitutional. But it's not even to our country. It's to a different country. No, if you do not agree with the government of Sweden, well, then you will lose all your contracts in Kansas. I don't know what the position of Sweden is. And by the way, it's on the issue of occupation. Again, you might not agree that BDS is the right way to do it, or you might think it's a wonderful way of pressuring Israel to end occupation. But imagine if Sweden is occupying other people, millions of people, and won't give them their rights, and they feel that that is oppression, and you have a different way to speak out against Sweden. They said, no, Kansas and Texas are obsessed about Sweden, and we will crush your church and your religious beliefs. And I don't care if you're in the worst kind of shape, and we're pretending to help you with the hurricane, unless you swear allegiance to Sweden and whatever government they happen to have, either super left wing, super right wing, it doesn't matter. We bow our heads to Sweden. It would be insanity. This is insanity. Now, they went and tried to find an expert who would say that this is legal. They found one. The Washington Post found Eugene Kantorovich. And Eugene came up with a really interesting hypothesis. Let me read you his claim here. He says, refusing to do business is not an inherently expressive activity, as the Supreme Court held in Rumsfeld versus Fair. So he's saying, well, look, the boycott thing, it's not necessarily speech, because I can tie your speech and your opinions to your refusal to do business. But the lady in Kansas didn't have a business contract. The person that's recovering from Hurricane Harvey does not have a pre-existing contract with the government of Israel. Even if it was relevant for Texas and Kansas to consider that, that's not the situation at hand. But there's an extra twist here. So this so-called legal expert is saying, to back up this insane law, now, if you are a corporation, you're a human being, and you have the right to speak, meaning spend money on politicians. So you as a corporation have the legal right to basically bribe politicians. It's legalized bribes, because you're speaking as a human. But if you're an actual human, you're a human being and a citizen of the United States, you do not have the right to speak, because while you are speaking, you are not doing business with Israel. Our corruption in America is so profound, so insane, that we take these things that are not remotely believable by any person, and we twist and twist and twist until you get to the result that people want. And in this case, people in power. And people in power have decided that Israel is untouchable. It doesn't matter if their government is left wing. It doesn't matter if it's moderate. It doesn't matter if it's right wing. It doesn't matter what it does.
You are not allowed to speak out against it. It doesn't matter if you're in Kansas or Texas or anything else. And church, we never cared about the church. The right wing was lying about your church all along. If the church has opinions that the right wing does not agree with, it will crush you and your religious beliefs. Okay, finally, let me get to an actual expert on this, Gregory Magarian, and he's a professor on this issue, and he says, quote, in my view, the anti-BDS clause in this application form is grossly unconstitutional. Whatever the merits or demerits of boycotting Israel, the decision to boycott is a matter of First Amendment rights. The government may not condition benefits on a recipient's agreement to waive or forego constitutional rights. That's called an unconstitutional condition, and it is clearly unlawful. And that is obvious to anyone who could read the United States Constitution. But if you need experts, the overwhelming majority of experts who actually are professors and constitutional law experts say, of course this is unconstitutional. The people in power have decided that they are going to do topsy-turvy logic on you in a thousand different ways to bend you to their will. And it doesn't matter what situation you're in, you're gonna have to bow your head because we don't live in a democracy. If we lived in a democracy, is the state of Texas and Kansas really passing laws against your personal beliefs, your constitutional rights, your church beliefs, just to protect another government? Of course that's not happening in a democracy. But we don't have a democracy. We have a situation where it's government to the highest bidder. And again, look, man, you don't have to like or dislike Israel for this. You don't have to like or dislike the boycotts. I hope you're against the occupation. I hope you're for a two-state solution. What are you, for a permanent occupation? You'd like to crush the Palestinians forever? I guess there's some people in that category. I hope you're not in that category. But even if you are, it's not related to this. This is about our rights as Americans. And what Texas is doing is abhorrent and yes, deeply unconstitutional. All right, we gotta take a break. When we come back, the O'Reilly scandal, the devil is in this case almost literally in the details. If I believed in the devil, I think that it would be literal. And then the DNC with one of the dirtiest tricks I've ever seen in politics, and yes, it's coming from the Democratic Party. I'll explain when we come back. Hey guys, we'll get to tweets a little bit later in the program because I got so much news for you guys. We gotta go, so let's go over here, okay? Back on the Young Turks, obviously. All right, a new development in gun ownership. Now a lot of different liberal groups are picking up guns. So I understand the inclination to do this, but I think it's a terrible idea. So let me explain what is happening and then why I think it's a bad idea. So there's a new club in Rochester, New York called Trigger Warning Queer and Trans Gun Club. And this is a new one, but there are some others that have been around a little bit that I'll explain to you in a little bit as well. And Jake Allen explains why they're doing this. He says, it's a way to assert our strength. Often queer people are thought of as being weak, as being defenseless, and I think in many ways this pushes back against that. And I want white supremacists and neo-Nazis to know that queer people are taking steps necessary to protect themselves. Now, boy, that urge is super understandable. And as you see, you know, the death in Charlottesville, and also a synagogue was at one point surrounded by neo-Nazis chanting Nazi chants. And in same thing in Charlottesville, that same protest. As you see situations like that, and then DeAndre Harris, an African-American man, was beaten so severely he had to get 10 staples in his head afterwards. So it's hard not to wanna pick up weapons and defend yourself. And here in this case, they're learning how to shoot better, and then obviously some are buying guns. But at the same time, I'm afraid that it plays exactly into the NRA strategy. Everybody be panicked, grab a gun, which then leads to more deaths, which then leads to more panic, which then leads to higher gun sales. And I'm not sure that this is the road that we want to go down. But again, let me give you more details here on the different groups doing it. They say that, and this is the Associated Press, membership in the Pittsburgh chapter of the Pink Pistols That's an LGBTQ oriented gun group with chapters nationwide, bumped up after the presidential election and then after a white supremacist killed a counter protester in Charlottesville this summer. So that's another LGBTQ group that has seen increased membership, but they're not alone. Then there's the Liberal Gun Club, a national organization, has seen its paid membership roughly double since the election to about 5,500, said Lara Smith of the group's California chapter. Now we've got LGBTQ people armed, we've got liberals armed, we already had the right wing armed, obviously. Now, of course, let's go to black folks. The National African American Gun Association gained 500 new members within 2 days after Charlottesville. Association President Philip Smith said the group went from 4 chapters to 45 in just the past year. Okay. By the way, that is when the right wing first, like, they're like, oh, LGBT people are getting guns. Fine. Liberals getting guns. Isn't that cute? What? Black people have guns? That's the first time that they got concerned. And now I'm putting that on them. That's a little bit of speculation, but it's that speculation is based on actual history. In California, we had very lax gun laws until the Black Panthers figured out, hey, you know what? We can walk into the state house with weapons. And it was perfectly legal, and they did. And a minute that black folks picked up weapons and walked into the state house, all of a sudden, California got way tougher gun regulation. You know who the governor was at the time that passed that legislation? That well-known liberal, Ronald Reagan. So on the one hand, again, boy, you want to defend yourself, I get it. And the other guys have guns. The neo-Nazis and the white supremacists have weapons, and they're not shy about it. I get it. And by the way, the minute black folks pick up guns, all of a sudden we're probably going to lead to more gun control. So that would be lovely, in my opinion. Okay, I get it. That being said, I give you the same rationale that I give the right wing. It's not a good idea. You're far more likely to get somebody in your own house killed. This whole idea of the intruders breaking in in the middle of the night and then you're going to defend yourself almost never happens. But I'll show you the numbers of what actually does happen. Accidental shootings between 2005 and 2010, 3,800 people died just from accidents. I'm not talking about homicides where you got mad at your wife or your husband and boom, in that moment you killed him. I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about suicides, which is a giant number. Just accidental shootings leading to deaths, leading to injuries in 2010 alone, 606. And then victims under the 25 years of age is 1,300 or so as well. So that's a lot of people dying because there was a gun in the house. Guns don't make you safer, they make you far less safe. So as much as I understand the urge to want to pick up guns, if you're in these groups, I don't think you're helping yourself at all. And when I say that to the right wing, it's not a trick. It's not to like, oh, we'll get the right wing to disarm and it'll be great. No, it's because I don't want them shooting themselves either. I don't want someone that's young in that household to get shot by accident either. Or sometimes it works the other way, where a kid accidentally pulls a trigger and kills his parents. We've done that story endless times. I don't want it happening to the right wing. I don't want it happening to the left wing. I don't want it happening to anyone. And the more there are guns around, the more it'll happen. That is a fact. So just be careful. And the only people celebrating this whole trend overall are the gun manufacturers that fund the NRA in the first place. They look at a story like this, and yeah, maybe they get concerned about parts of it, but overall they think mission accomplished. Higher gun sales, which will almost certainly lead to more deaths, which will lead to more panic, which will lead to more gun sales. Don't feed into that beast. Okay, now we go to Bill O'Reilly. Okay, buckle up. New York Times with another story about sexual harassment settlements regarding Bill O'Reilly. Now remember, he'd already settled 5 cases. This is number 6. And this one he settled personally for a stunning amount of money. This did not come from Fox News. They knew about it. They claimed they didn't know what the number was, but they knew that it happened and they gave him a big contract anyway. So let's get to all the details, stunning details. As the Times reports, last January, 6 months after Fox News ousted its chairman amid a sexual harassment scandal, the network's top-rated host at the time, Bill O'Reilly, struck a $32 million agreement
with a longtime network analyst to settle new sexual harassment allegations, according to two people briefed on the matter, an extraordinarily large amount for such cases. Gretchen Carlson, who got $20 million from Fox News on similar charges against Ailes and the company overall, said nobody settles for $32 million if they didn't do it. That seems to be unassailable logic. Now, you could disagree and go, oh yeah, he's rich. He can throw around $32 million for false charges. Because Bill O'Reilly, he's a wilting flower. I mean, he wouldn't want to fight false charges, right? Only way he settles is if those charges were absolutely true. More details on what they were. Although the deal has not been previously made public, the network's parent company, 21st Century Fox, acknowledges that it was aware of the woman's complaints about Mr. O'Reilly. They included allegations of repeated harassment and non-consensual sexual relationship and the sending of gay pornography and other sexually explicit material to her, according to people briefed on the matter. Look, there's a part of that that I care deeply about and a part I don't care about at all. Okay, I don't care what kind of pornography he was sending to this person. If it was consensual, that's their business, not my business. And by the way, they say gay pornography, I don't know what that means. If you're thinking I do, okay, it could mean as in straight, not straight male, gay male pornography. It could mean as in gay female pornography. I believe that some straight men have, you know, from time to time watched lesbian porn. Okay, so it is not my defense of Bill O'Reilly. I just want you to know that I'm being as fair as possible. The non-consensual sex, that is 1,000,000,000% unacceptable. So if it's consensual, let them watch whatever porn they want to watch. Who cares? Because we're not moralists like Bill O'Reilly and Fox News. We don't talk about family values and pretend that we have better values than you do and we're going to judge you day in and day out. That's Bill O'Reilly's job. But if it's non-consensual, hell no. And so you're telling me Fox News, you know about this and then you gave him the contract? Oh boy, all right, let's get to those details. It was at least a six agreement and by far the largest made by either Mr. O'Reilly or the company to settle harassment allegations against them. Despite that record, 21st Century Fox began contract negotiations with Mr. O'Reilly and in February granted him a 4-year extension that paid $25 million a year. So they're like, oh Bill, this is your sixth case that you have settled for women that said they were sexually harassed by you and you gave them money because you were afraid they were right or for whatever reason you were afraid. And now, despite the fact that I know that, I'm going to turn around and give you a $100 million contract anyway. Gee, I wonder what 21st Century Fox's values are. Are they the same as your family values? And maybe for the old right wingers like Rupert Murdoch, he thinks, yeah, of course. Look, back in the good old days, we used to be able to do whatever we wanted to women. So would I give O'Reilly $100 million knowing that he's a serial sexual harasser? Of course I would. He did. The proof's in the pudding. In January, the reporting shows Rupert Murdoch and his sons Lachlan and James, the top executives at 21st Century Fox, made a business calculation to stand by Mr. O'Reilly despite his most recent and potentially most explosive harassment dispute. Their decision came as the company was trying to convince its employees, its board, and the public that it had cleaned up the network's workplace culture. At the same time, they were determined to hold on to Mr. O'Reilly, whose value to the network increased after the departure of another prominent host, Megyn Kelly. Oh my God, they cared more about the money than they did about actual human beings and whether they were forced into sexual acts by their star host. It was a business decision. Meanwhile, they're going around telling everybody, oh yeah, Ailes, that was an aberration. We cleaned this thing up. But no, Fox News is great now. It's a wonderful place to work. Meanwhile, they secretly know, oh my God, O'Reilly just had another giant settlement for another sexual harassment case. Who cares? Is he making us money? Good. Bring him in. Now, there were other business considerations, and that's the only thing that eventually got O'Reilly fired anyway when we found out about this. So a little bit of that from the New York Times.
But by April, the Murdochs decided to jettison Mr. O'Reilly as some of the settlements became public and posed a significant threat to their business empire. Okay? Now, it's because they were trying to buy another media organization in the UK. And meanwhile, advertisers started dropping out of O'Reilly's program. They're like, well, now we're making less money from the sexual harasser who has settled for non-consensual sex. Okay? And it might cost us money over in the UK for another part of our business empire. Oh, listen, I got it. We'll pretend to be moral. And we'll have all the other hosts still talk about family values. Meanwhile, we'll push for war on air. We'll push for all these different things that are despicable and the death penalty and all these things where people die. We'll call that family values. But now we'll turn around and fire O'Reilly and pretend we did it for moral reasons. Hilarious, Murdochs, hilarious. Okay? Now, the woman involved is Ms. Wheel. I don't want to talk too much about her. She's dragged into this, but you got to know who she is in order for you to understand the context of this. She's a legal analyst and she was on Fox News for 15 years. So let me give you a little bit of context here from the Times. The settlement with Ms. Wheel was more than three times the amount of any of Mr. O'Reilly's previously known deals. In 2004, he had settled a lawsuit with a producer, Andrea Macris, for about $9 million. Publicly known harassment settlements involving Mr. O'Reilly have now totaled about $45 million. There might be other ones we don't know about, but so far he has paid out of pocket $45 million to settle case after case after case. And in the Andrea Macris case, we do know the details because the phone conversations were leaked. And he would call her up and without any of her participation or permission, begin to masturbate over the phone and telling her how he's doing it and how he'd like to rub loofahs and falafels all over her. And it's just, look, again, if you're gonna have phone sex and it's consensual, I don't care what your sandwiches you're smearing on each other. But she didn't ask for it. She didn't tell you it was okay. You just call her out of the blue without her participation. You can tell it's on the phone call. She doesn't participate at all. And he just keeps going and going and going. And this is a person who works with him. And he is clearly in a position where he can affect her job. He's like, you stay on the phone and you listen to this. What does that remind you of? And by the way, another executive, Harvey Weinstein, who told a woman when she didn't refuse to have sex with him, well, then just shut up and stand there as he masturbated in front of her. Jesus Christ. Okay, family values, guys. All right, and Weinstein is theoretically liberal. O'Reilly pretends to have family values and is clearly conservative. So, although the matter had been settled confidentially, Mr. O'Reilly's lawyers were concerned about keeping the dollar figure secret. Mr. Newman provided the company with a document that informed them of the deal but did not include a dollar figure. That makes News Corp's or 21st Century Fox's claims about not knowing the number figure a little bit more believable. But does it really matter that much? What if it was for only $3 million or only $12 million, only $24 million? Would it make a difference if the allegations in this case are true? And O'Reilly has settled that case knowing that he does not want to dispute it. He does not want to go to open court and say that it's not true. These are the Fox News guys, the O'Reilly guys, they love a fight. They start fights day in and day out. You think O'Reilly's going to shy away from that fight? The only way he's going to do it is because it's true. Okay. The first time that Bill O'Reilly had Wheel on his show, he's almost doing it on air. This is the exchange that happened. He said, hey, you know, Liz, I got you this job. You know that. She says, I know you did. I know. O'Reilly says, so you owe me. You owe me big. And she says, no, no, no. Which, by the way, pretty much defined their relationship going forward if these charges are true. And again, he paid $32 million, probably because he thinks, oh, yeah, they're true. And he didn't want it getting out. Okay. Mr. O'Reilly also made suggestive remarks to Ms. Wheel on the air. During one segment on his radio show in 2005 about a strip club, he suggested that she learn how to dance for a $10,000 tip. Now, if they're friends, old friends, and that's the kind of show he's doing, you say, hey, they're having fun, that's their banter, that's their business, not my business. She is a legal analyst. She didn't ask to have those kind of conversations. He literally says on air, no, no, no. And then he's talking about how she should go make tips at a strip club. Real classy. Look, you could do, if it was just that, again, you could say he's a pig and leave it at that. But once you get into non-consensual sexual situations, hell no. He should have been gone immediately when they found out about it. Okay, dated January 7th. It called for, now this is the actual contract, the settlement terms. It called for Ms. Wheel to be paid over a period of time to ensure her silence. In return, she agreed not to sue Mr. O'Reilly, Fox News or 21st Century Fox. And all photos, text messages, and other communications between the two would be destroyed. But wait, Bill, if you're right that it's not true, which he now absolutely insists, why would you want to get rid of the evidence? Wouldn't you want to keep the evidence? Because the evidence is going to prove you right. No, part of the settlement was shred the evidence. Whatever you do, light that evidence on fire. Gee, I wonder who's right and who's wrong. I can't quite tell. In recent weeks, Mr. O'Reilly has made several public appearances to promote a new book, as the Times explains. He said on the Today Show that he never sent a lewd text or email to a Fox News employee, that his conscience is clear, and that a quote political and financial hit job brought him down. If you never sent any of those text messages, why does it say in the settlement, destroy the text messages I sent you? Oops. So how in the world is he going to defend the indefensible? Just when you thought it couldn't get worse for Mr. Family Values, he's going to hide behind his kids. I wasn't going to do this part, but he literally brought it up over half a dozen times, some of which you'll see here. I mean, we might hit that count just on the audio that I'm going to share with you. But overall, in all of his defenses, possibly over a dozen times, anytime the charge is brought up, he hides behind his kids. Listen.
This experience, I've been in the broadcast business, journalism business, 43 years. I've never had one complaint filed against me by a coworker in any human resources department in 43 years. And that encompasses 12 different companies. So all of a sudden, all this stuff happens, and the pain it brings to my children is indescribable. Indescribable. And I would give up my life to protect my children, but I find myself not being able to protect them because of things that are being said about me, their father. And I will go back to my children. So when situations arose, we handled them as methodically and as responsibly as we could without putting my children in grave danger.
Nobody brought up your kids. And if they did, I would chastise them. Say, what do his poor kids have anything to do with this guy? They don't have anything to do with him. They're not connected to him. They didn't have it. Jesus, don't get him involved in this. He's the only one bringing up his kids. And he keeps going, oh my God, this is going to hurt my kids. Well, maybe you should have thought about that before you did the non-consensual sex. Maybe you should have thought about that before sexually harassing one woman after another that worked with you. But when you were doing that, and you were doing the loofah and the falafel and everything else, then you didn't worry about your kids. Now that you've been caught, all of a sudden, oh, my kids, my kids, my kids. Oh, yeah. That's really genuine, Bill, and that's really classy. Look, I'm going to leave out what his kids actually said about him in his divorce settlement, because I don't want to go there. But he does it over and over again. Here, listen, now that was with the New York Times earlier. This is with Glenn Beck.
You've got to understand how much pain this brings children. And I thought I could spare my children that. I'd do anything for my children, anything to protect them. I'd give up my life for my children.
I'd do anything except not sexually harass women at work. That I won't do. It's so gross that he's hiding behind his kids. What a terrible, terrible guy. And then that argument earlier about, oh, nobody ever brought it to human resources. That's because you paid them millions of dollars. And the idea that technically they didn't go to human resources, that's your one big aha. You paid one of them $9 million, you paid another one $32 million. I think that's a little bit more evidence than they didn't technically go to human resources at the right time.
Okay, one last thing now. We're not the only ones that are skeptical about the number and how gigantic it is if he didn't actually do it. Even Glenn Beck was skeptical. And then listen to Bill O'Reilly's non-answer here.
Okay, you can settle, but $32 million coming out of your own pocket, nobody does that.
Right.
So did
what do you want me to say? I'm not. Comment I could make on that issue without getting the thing back into a legal arena would be the first article that the New York Times wrote, quoted figures in. Added them up, and it was wildly wrong. But I can't confirm or deny anything, because once I do that, then it goes back into the legal arena, which you don't want, and they know that.
Was this settlement by you alone, or was Fox involved?
I can't, Beck, as I told you off the camera, I know you have to ask the questions for your audience. I can't comment on any specific case at all. If I could, I would. But I cannot. I know it's frustrating.
No, it's really frustrating too. Because
it's very frustrating for me. You can imagine me sitting here, all right, being accused of everything under the sun, and the end game is let's link O'Reilly with Harvey Weinstein. Let's make him that. That's what we want to do. But unless I want another 7 or 8 years of constant litigation that puts my children in a kill zone. I have to maintain my discipline.
There he goes again. Children in the kill zone. What on God's green earth are you talking about? So bottom line is 32 million. That's kind of hard to understand if you didn't do it. Quote, what do you want me to say? And then he's like, oh man, I can't because of the legal situation. But it's not like your money's on the line in terms of like, they didn't pay you, you paid them. You paid them so that it wouldn't be out in the open. So if you want, you can talk about it all you want. You're the one that said in those settlements, you are, whether it's Wheel or anyone else, you're not allowed to talk about this in public. It didn't say you're not allowed to talk about it. You're allowed to talk about it all you want, because you're the one who did it. You're the one who paid them the money, so they wouldn't talk. Totally disingenuous. This is who Bill O'Reilly is. He's a sick, sick man. And for all those years, for decades, News Corp paid him to lecture you about family values and how you weren't good enough and that he was going to judge your values. Meanwhile, he goes home and does this. So the next time somebody talks to you about family values and how they are more moral than you, remember Bill O'Reilly, remember Roger Ailes and what they were doing in private. They don't mean a word of it. They're the world's biggest hypocrites. All right, one more story for you in this segment. Sorry, guys. Okay. So Donald Trump recently got himself into a mess about Gold Star families and whether he's written letters to them or called them. And then he lashed out against President Obama and former presidents. I have an update on that story for you guys. And if it wasn't so disturbing, it would be funny. But before we go to the update, in case you didn't see, there's the context of when it was first brought up. They asked him about four service members who had died in Niger in an ambush by ISIS, and whether he'd reached out to them and why he's not talking about it. And this was his initial answer.
Anything from you so far about the soldiers that were killed in Niger, and what do you have to say about
them? I've written them personal letters. They've been sent, or they're going out tonight, but they were written during the weekend. I will, at some point during the period of time, call the parents and the families, because I have done that traditionally.
I have done it, but they'll go out later, but I will do it, and I have done it. As soon as I saw that clip, if you guys saw that edition of the Young Turks, I told you that's nonsense. He hasn't done it. If he had done it, he would have just said, I did it. Are you crazy? I did it really great. It was a beautiful letters and beautiful calls that I had made to them. It was obvious he hadn't done it. I've got the facts on that for you in a second, but let me show you one more where he equivocated.
Traditional way, if you look at President Obama and other presidents, most of them didn't make calls. A lot of them didn't make calls. I like to call when it's appropriate, when I think I'm able to do it. They have made the ultimate sacrifice. So generally, I would say that I like to call. I'm going to be calling them. I want a little time to pass. I'm going to be calling them. I have, as you know, since I've been president, I have.
I have and I will, but I've sent the letters. I've sent the letters and the calls when I can, when I'm not busy golfing. Okay. So did he actually send the letters? All right, here comes the hilarious update from HuffPost. Multiple families of military service members killed in the line of duty are now getting rush-delivered letters from President Donald Trump days after Trump claimed he had called the immediate families of all service members who had been killed since he took office in January. In other words, for the billionth time in a row, caught with his hand in the cookie jar, going, "Oh, okay, yeah, letters, yeah, of course. I wrote the letters. I'm going to write them." And everyone read. And of course, he doesn't write any of the letters, is my best guess. Anyway, he sends them out in a panic. More details. The Atlantic reported Saturday that their reporters had spoken to three Gold Star families who received condolence packages from the president this week. Funny coincidence. The Associated Press reported it had reached out to families of all 43 people who have died in military service since Trump became president, but only made contact with about half of the families. Some families told AP they were comforted by Trump's call, while others hadn't heard from the president at all. A couple of specific instances here from the AP. The family of Army Sergeant Jonathan M. Hunter, who died in a suicide bombing in Afghanistan in August, was promised a call from the president, but instead heard from Vice President Mike Pence. Brittany Harris, the widow of Army Specialist Christopher Michael Harris, who also died in Afghanistan in August, said she had not heard from the president either. Associated Press identified at least two other Gold Star families who had wanted but did not receive a call from the president. I did it. Okay, fine, I'll send it now. And he can't help himself. Nonetheless, here he is doubling down.
That question, and for the most part, to best of my knowledge, I think I've called every family of somebody that's died, and it's the hardest call to make, and I said it very loud and clear yesterday. The hardest thing for me to do is do that. Now, as far as other representatives, I don't know. I mean, you could ask General Kelly, did he get a call from Obama? But I have called, I believe everybody, but certainly I'll use the word virtually everybody, where during the last 9 months, something's happened to a soldier. I've called virtually everybody. I've gone to Dover.
Virtually everybody. The guy has no bounds at all, man. You think we can't see the date on the letters? You think that the reporters aren't going to call the families and ask him, hey, did you get a call or did you not get a call? Did you get a letter or did you not get a letter? He doesn't care about you. If it's about him and his ego, okay, fine, he'll do something. If not, he's not going to do it. And so he only sent those letters in a rush because his hand again caught in the cookie jar. If it wasn't, God knows if he would have ever sent them. All right, I got to take a little break here. When we come back, the dirty tricks from the DNC and a company tells the Young Turks they're not allowed to mock the president. I will give you the details of that when we return. All right, back on the Young Turks. The mathemagician says, Cenk's back. Missed you, dude. I appreciate it, but I was only gone Friday. I was here all week, including first hour of Thursday. But yeah, really appreciate it. Thank you, man. Daniel Wilker says, my dad had bone spurs. The Air Force shaved them off. See, if you're not connected like Donald Trump, bone spurs, no problem. Shave that thing right off. You're Donald Trump, or you're free to go. Okay, great point. And Brian Newton writes in, if you're too afraid to go fight in a war, just be decent and don't send other people into conflicts. Makes sense. It's not like we're saying, hey, you know what? It's crazy to be afraid of going to war and dying. That's not crazy at all. But then don't go around sending other people's kids to those needless wars. All right, Alex says, a bunch of my LGBT plus friends got guns after Orlando. So yes, it's a real trend. Alex, you're not wrong. It's happening all across the country. Rob Brown finally says, do you know what the court calls non-consensual sex when committed by the poor? Rape. When it's by the rich, well, we got a settlement and et cetera, and we'll call it non-consensual and move on. Okay. Unfortunately, good points. Yes. All right, now, let me give you the final two dramatic stories. Okay. So here at the Young Turks, every once in a while, we'll wear t-shirts, you'll see TYT mugs, and I had an old one here. Here, sure, fine, I'll show it to you, okay? It's a little worn out. We've used it a bunch of times. We thought, well, you know what? Football season's here and winter's coming. Got a cold drink. You're going to want maybe put that drink or beer into the protective gear so that your hands don't get cold. Now, I'm calling it protective gear, and you're like, what are you talking about? It's because the word is so unfortunate. It's called a koozie. Okay, so here are some koozies we were planning to, you know, sell at shoptyt.com. If you love the Young Turks, or you're just amused by the kofefe, you want to put your coffee in a kofefe, or Jurassic Prick, etc. That makes sense, right? We got a store. Okay, fine. So that part would be totally uninteresting. Well, we go to have it printed out, and Bic, which apparently now is in the publishing business as well as the pen business, the pen business still exists, told us no. What do you mean no? What does no mean? I mean, what a strange thing. I mean, you're not paying us, we're paying you. We want to pay you to print these out. So why no? Well, here's a statement. All items ordered, thank you, but we are unable to print your order. Per the terms and conditions in our catalogs, Bic Graphic reserves the right not to print any logo or message that is deemed inappropriate. Please let us know if you would like to revise your artwork, and we will place your order on hold until we receive new artwork. There are two imprints that we are unable to proceed with as they mock the current president. Well, here's my answer to that. Goddamn right they do, because we don't agree with the president. Bic Graphics, I got news for you. It's called America. We're allowed to have any opinion of the president that we like. God help you if we find out what you thought of the last president. Okay. Anyway, maybe it's just a corporate decision and they're afraid of all powerful people and they're saying, oh my God, don't criticize the president. Maybe in Russia, maybe in Saudi Arabia, but here in America, yeah, we get to criticize the president, we get to mock the president. Like if they had said, hey, you know what, the language is inappropriate, that would also be absurd. God knows what they've printed in the past. But it would at least have a leg to stand on. But they didn't. No, they said, no. You're offending the poor sensibilities of our beloved president, so we won't print this stuff. So I assume that the two that they were most troubled with, I hope it wasn't resist or kofefe. I don't know, maybe they find that. Look, that's his word. If you think we're mocking him with his own word that he made up and later pretended was important. But I assume that they mean this one, Bitchy Rich. By the way, you can get that t-shirt, you apparently can't get a koozie, but you could get a t-shirt or posters, etc. on shoptyt.com with this on it, because that we didn't need permission from Bic Graphic to print, or Jurassic Prick. I happen to think they're both fairly clever. I didn't come up with them, but I kind of love them. So we're not allowed to print those on our koozie in America because Bic Graphic would like to protect the sensibilities of the president? That's preposterous. Hey, it's their company, they could run it any way they like. But now you know, if Bic Graphic thinks you're offending Donald Trump, they will not do business with you. They won't even take your money. Seems like a poor choice, but just wanted to let you know where they stand. Preposterous. All right, shoptyt.com. Okay. The next story I saved to the end because not only because it's important, but because I'm going to get worked up enough that I don't think I'm going to want to do other stories in this hour. Okay, all right, here we go. Now, recently there's been a lot of drama at the Democratic National Committee. There's some shakeups by the chair, Tom Perez. He removed some members of the executive committee, the rules committee, very important committees that might decide whether anyone but Tom Perez and a finance person gets to see their budget. Now, their budget involves hundreds of millions of dollars, and a lot of that goes to consultants, Democratic consultants who are very, very powerful. My guess is that those are the folks that are behind this entire mess, because they've got a lot of money on the line. But Tom Perez is their guy, and the establishment backed Tom Perez, and so people were removed. Off you go, James Zogby, you've been there for decades, you're gone, and many others. You're chair of the Nebraska Democratic Party, the New Hampshire Democratic Party, I don't care. If you oppose the establishment or Tom Perez, or if you are an Ellison supporter and a Bernie Sanders supporter, watch out, you gotta go. So a lot of people kicked out of those committees, and then there's these at-large appointments, and some people were removed from that. And then the DNC came back and said, oh, it's okay, we put in diversity. Diversity of ideas, a diversity of who they're backing, no. They're all pro-establishment. But diversity as in, you know, one is transgendered, well, you kicked out someone who was transgendered. So how did you add diversity there? I don't care, I'm hiding behind diversity. Now, that was all bad enough when we reported that to you last week. This week, it's gotten way worse. So, what did they do? They floated a rumor that the most progressive people were actually targeting black women at the DNC. What on, where did you get that rumor? They planted it themselves. They can't point to a single person who was alleged to have said that, because there is no such person. So instead, they went to BuzzFeed News here, which I think, I gotta be honest, is a terrible job here. You're not supposed to print rumors because somebody came and wanted to plant a rumor with you. And they admit it's a rumor. So BuzzFeed News goes, okay, who do you want me to smear? All right, great, you wanna smear the Bernie people? Great, let's do that. So they quote, this is quoting BuzzFeed News itself, a rumor that pro-Bernie Sanders Democrats have proposed removing three prominent black women as at-large members of the Democratic National Committee set off a fury here at the party's fall meeting, lighting up tensions between anti-establishment progressives and Chairman Tom Perez, as Democrats rushed late Thursday to find out where the rumor had come from and what motives drove it. These people keep pretending, and I'll tell you the source of some of those rumors a little bit later in this story, keep pretending that Bernie Sanders supporters, who are, by their own admission, the establishment says, we're too progressive, we're too liberal, we're not practical and pragmatic enough, but the most progressive people in the country are somehow racist and sexist. Now, some of the people that they removed were women, who cares? Some are minorities, who cares? It doesn't matter, we're gonna smear you. Okay, then show me one person who's actually against black women from the Bernie campaign, or these specific three black women. Nobody, it's just a rumor, it's just a rumor. Why would the Bernie people plant the rumor? That makes no sense at all. Why would they want to plant a rumor against themselves? No logic in that. Now, if you wanted to plant a rumor to smear the other side, and you had a couple hundred million dollars in motivation to make sure nobody sees that budget, because then they might get mad that you're taking a huge percentage of it, whoever those Democratic consultants are that actually control the party, then what would you want to do? Oh, let me hide behind minorities and spread a rumor, and I'll go to BuzzFeed News and they'll print it and get everybody all worked up. Now, one of the people that was removed from last week was James Zogby. Like I told you, decades with the Democratic Party. They explain here, James Zogby, a key Sanders ally and a longtime DNC member, who found out he would lose a spot on the party's executive committee, was among several progressives who cast the move as a form of retaliation against those who do not support Perez in his bid for chair earlier this year. Well, yeah, that part is true. He supported Ellison, now all of a sudden he's off the executive committee. But did James Zogby say anything about black women? No, no, he didn't. Well, it doesn't matter, I'll just put his name out there and go, oh, golly gee. He didn't like being removed, but that's not the same as spreading the rumor, so then they have to go talk to him. By Thursday afternoon, 2 days after Perez announced his appointments, the rumor was this: Zogby and other pro-Sanders Democrats wanted to flout Perez's picks for at-large DNC members by proposing an alternate slate, one that would swap out three prominent black women. Now, again, there is absolutely no evidence that that happened. So Zogby is asked about it, and he goes, "Of course I didn't do that. That's preposterous. Nobody did that." He explains he has known the three women, Daughtry, Moore, and Brazil, Donna Brazil, for years. He said in large part through his work on the 1984-1988 Jesse Jackson campaigns. So the person who's theoretically against blacks is one of the most liberal guys in the Democratic Party, is himself a minority, supported Jesse Jackson for president, and is recently in trouble with the establishment because he supported Keith Ellison for his head of the DNC. Keith Ellison, who is also black. Wow, seems like a virulent racist to me. Preposterous. You see, the only thing they want to do is get us to talk about it so that they can say, I don't know, some people say this, some people say that, and then the smear is accomplished. But we're not going to play that game. Instead, we're going to out you for who you are and that you're doing the dirtiest tricks possible. These are the same people who planted the anti-Semitism charges against Keith Ellison. There's nothing they won't do to protect their money. It is the dirtiest tricks I've ever seen. Do they ever do it against Republicans? No. With the Republicans, they play patty cakes. And they lost over 1,000 state seats. They've lost 69 out of 99 state legislatures. They lost the House, they lost the Senate, they lost the Supreme Court. They lost the presidency to Donald Trump. Patty cakes with Republicans all day long. And then they go, oh, we're pragmatic. Pragmatic at what? You are miserable failures. And the minute anyone challenges you and says, we believe the Democrats can do better. We believe progressives can do better. And we believe we can beat Republicans if we actually fight them. They turn around and fight you in the most vicious ways possible. Okay, Zogby continues to explain. I would never turn against those three women. That is not what I've done. These are friends of mine who I care about. And I simply find it deplorable that someone would start that rumor in order to create a deeper wedge to absolve themselves from the crappy decisions that they have made. Okay, then the DNC spokesperson comes out and goes, wait. I'm not done hiding behind diversity yet. So they say, we are proud of the unprecedented diversity of this year's slate at large DNC members. We must come together in unity and embrace our diversity in order to win elections up and down the ballot. But who argued against diversity? No one. You made that up. Who was our candidate? Who did I want to win the DNC race? Keith Ellison, who's black. So where is the lack of diversity? Who are the people who wanted to remove these three women? No one. No one. All you have is a rumor that you yourself planted. Okay, so Leah Daughtry is really mad. She goes up and gives a speech. Now, I don't know her motivations at all. I've never met her. I don't know her at all. And it's possible that she believes these rumors and is then incensed. If you believe the rumors, you would be incensed. I'd be incensed, right? So she comes up and gives a speech. She says, I have done the work. I have paid my dues. And I have earned my seat at the table. And yet over the course of this meeting, some unnamed, shadowy, increasingly noisy faction of our party has suggested that I and a few of my like-minded friends are the wrong kind of Democrat to hold membership of the DNC. That somehow, maybe because of my race, maybe because of my gender, maybe because of the brashness that comes from the combination of the two, maybe because I actually had a history and institutional memory of our party, maybe because I chose to support the nominee of our party, I don't know what their reasons were. Maybe they didn't know that black women are the strongest loyalists and the most consistent voting bloc of the Democratic Party. Maybe they forgot that we show up when nobody else shows up. Well, if she genuinely believes that that rumor was planted by the Bernie faction, then I'd be mad too, and that would justify this speech. And I don't know her, so I don't know what she genuinely believes. But there is no proof that anyone actually wanted to get rid of her or a series of African American women, none whatsoever. But then she calls the other side, meaning the Bernie side, a noisy faction. Well, Hillary Clinton, with her army of media help, I would argue was a little noisier. With her paid trolls, paid by David Brock during the primaries, I would argue were a little noisier. I would argue that a lot of the establishment has been very, very noisy as they just got rid of people. You claim that there is a rumor that somebody might have wanted to get rid of you with no evidence. The other side actually did get rid of people. They just got rid of them right in front of our eyes last week. And look, two can play at this game. Let's talk about the people that they have had problems with in the past. Okay, Keith Ellison, he's a Muslim. James Zogby, of Middle Eastern descent. From time to time, I have received criticism. Also of Middle Eastern descent. Is that Trump level bigotry? You're going to go after, and I was born in a Muslim family, I'm not agnostic now. If I connect the dots, it looks like three people from a certain religion or region, and you guys are all targeting them. That's kind of weird. Do you agree that there should be a travel ban, a Muslim ban? I don't know. Look, First of all, let me be super clear. I'm not putting any of that on Leah Daughtry. Again, I don't know her at all. And again, I would understand her frustration if she genuinely believed that that was happening. But I'm talking about the people who are planting this stuff. And by the way, she said, but I will say one last thing about the last sentence. She said, maybe they forgot that we show up when nobody else shows up. I'll tell you who didn't forget about African-American women showing up. That's Bernie Sanders. Let me show you a picture of him from decades ago. That's a civil rights protest that he showed up to. He's chained to an African-American woman. She showed up, he showed up, they showed up together. And he said, if you're going to arrest her, you're going to arrest me. He was the first guy to ever say, I'm with her. So the reason people like Bernie Sanders is because he showed up way before anyone else did. He defended those progressive values way before anyone else did. So if we want to talk about showing up, there's a reason why he has credibility. All right, now let's go to someone who doesn't have as much credibility on this issue. That's Tom Perez. Now, I talked about the consultants and the David Brocks and all these shadowy guys with all of their money. You want to talk about shadowy? Those are the shadowy guys. We're right here. We're right here. They get mad at me sometimes for saying things on air. I'm saying it in front of you. There's no rumors. There's no stabbing in the back. There's no going around people and planting things with friendly members of the press and smearing people and trying to ruin their reputations. Okay, we're right here. Now, on the other hand, Tom Perez, back during the primaries, he supported Hillary Clinton. Nothing wrong with that. A lot of people supported Hillary Clinton. But he wrote a memo that we got because of WikiLeaks. And he was talking about Nevada. And he said, Nevada is an opportunity to fight back on so many levels. First, the current storyline is that she does not connect well with young voters. Given that Nevada is far more demographically representative of America, I am confident that Hillary Clinton can do well with all African Americans, Latinos, and Asian Americans. Don't forget the sizable population of Asian Americans in Nevada, including Filipinos. So far, nothing wrong with that at all. He's making an affirmative case for his candidate. Hey, you know what? I think Hillary connects great with these different demographic groups, and I think we'll show it in Nevada. Perfectly fine. But wait, there's a second sentence coming. It says, Emmy and the team have a good plan to attract all minority voters. When we do well there, then the narrative changes from Bernie kicks ass among young voters to Bernie does well only among young white liberals. That is a different story and a perfect lead into South Carolina, where once again, we can work to attract young voters of color. So I think Nevada is a real opportunity. Let me repeat that part in the middle. Bernie does well only among young white liberals. Now, is that true? No, even in that case in Nevada, he actually won Latinos. She won the state overall, and she won African Americans in Nevada. Fair is fair. But Bernie won the Latinos. There's actually not much evidence to that effect at all. But Tom Perez was one of the original guys internally saying, let's say that Bernie only does well among young white liberals. Then when we go to South Carolina, which is heavily African American in the Democratic primary, we'll say, hey, remember Bernie only does well with white people. Gee, I wonder where the smears came from in the beginning. Can't quite tell. Later in another email, Perez writes, in my Hillary Clinton advocacy, I now say how these people don't have the time to wait for Senator Sanders to complete his quest for the perfect healthcare system or the perfect immigration reform bill. In other words, let's tell minorities, Bernie Sanders wants you to have great stuff, great healthcare and great immigration. But that is somehow racist. Let's convince them that not working towards those goals is actually the pro-Latino, pro-African-American, pro-minority position. Hey, remember, you don't have time for good solutions, so just accept, bow your heads, accept our crappy solutions, and then we'll help use that to frame Bernie Sanders as only for white people. Gee, I wonder where the rumors came from about racial angles here and discontent. Couldn't be from a guy who already did that once before, right? Look, I don't even think Tom Perez is the guy. In terms of, I don't know if he planted this specific rumor. I do know that he was happy to frame issues like that during the campaign. Seems very, very happy to do it in the past. What I mean by Tom Perez is not necessarily the guy is Tom Perez is not the guy taking home hundreds of millions of dollars. If you've got about $800 million spent on a campaign through the Democratic National Committee, which you guys paid money for, and consultants are taking a percentage of that, 15, 25, no one knows because only Tom Perez and the finance person at the DNC knows. And they don't want to change that rule. God forbid you found out. And you found out, hey, 25% is going to into the pockets of consultants. That would be $200 million. My guess is those guys, whoever they are highly motivated to smear everyone else. And if they need to use Tom Perez, well, then they use Tom Perez. And if they need to pretend that that the other side is going after minorities, then they'll pretend it's going after minorities. Whatever they got to do to keep that gravy train going. Gee, I wonder why people are upset at the DNC. Not quite sure. If you can't figure this, and look, it's not that they can't figure it out. It's that they still don't understand that the internet exists. They think that's all right. We just do these smear jobs. We get our friends in the press to plant it as a story all over media. We'll get Morning Joe to get all huffy about it because Morning Joe is on our side. And we'll get all the TV pundits to be on our side. And they'll push, push, push. And nobody will find out. Wrong. We do find out. And we see what's going on. And we're not going to let you get away with it. So later, when people are angry at you, don't pretend you don't know why. Dirty tricks like this are exactly why people are furious with you, and they should be. For God's sake, support progressives who actually would like to defeat Republicans and not other progressives. But if these guys were progressive, they wouldn't do any of this stuff. They're corporatists. They just want the money. And if you try to get money out of politics, boy, then they are furious with you. Then you go, oh my God, that's a real change. No, 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 everybody settle down. What you really want is a really, really small change. One that doesn't get money out of politics at all. One that certainly doesn't get money out of my pocket. Whether you like it or not, it's not just us. It's the audience. It's the progressives. We're all on to you. And we'll see you at the next election. Young Turks.